Hi, today is March 26, 2023. This is Mobius Podcast 453. I'm Todd Agassaward, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to, well, you know, everybody's only talking about the alleged AI tools. I think some people are saying it's not, we shouldn't call it AI, we should just call it Large Language Models, LLM, which I'm okay with, you know, if people want to get fussy about terminology. But I like AI, you know, Star Trek fan, et cetera, et cetera.
I've never found it all that interesting until the last 3 months, because it's always been so limited, and I haven't really seen much use for it in my daily life. But as we'll talk about today, it's starting to get there.
Oh, I'm really surprised, John. I really am. because of your, you know, your area of core interest and all that, and the fact that 40 years ago, that's all I was doing with extremely primitive tools. Looking back, I mean, writing in raw Lisp and Prolog and stuff. Oh, boy. Yes, it's been a while. Anyway, but before we get started, I did want to mention a couple of things. Just actually one thing. Last week, I was talking about how YouTube Music is adding a YouTube podcast component, or has added a YouTube podcast component, and that we can publish our podcast through it. Well, we already publicast through Google Play. So you can get it through Google, what used to be called Google Music. I guess it's called Google Play now, but it being MobViews Podcast. But YouTube, you know, YouTube Music Podcast seems like a good additional outlet, and probably it's going to, knowing Google, they're going to kill Google Play soon. So
they kill everything else. So it's on their list. It's almost like, you know, when you start a new thing at Google, you immediately add it to the to-be-killed list.
That's
sort of like those banker's boxes that have the to-be-destroyed date.
Yeah.
Just kind of pre-fill that in.
So, you know, in anticipation of Google doing that and YouTube Music Podcast requires you to have a video component to your podcast to be published. And as you know, John and I famously don't want to record a podcast because it's a giant hassle, number one, and a giant storage suck for something most people won't care about anyway. So I bought a $10 tool called TuneSquid for the iPad. It's an animation app that's been getting a lot of good reviews over the last, I don't know, maybe 6-12 months. I only became aware of it recently. And it's $9.99. US dollars. There is no in-app purchase as far as I can figure out, which is sort of amazing these days. You know, I thought it was, well, if you want layers, or you want color? Yes, if you want color, that's another $10. But no, it's $9.99 US, and it seems fully featured for that $9.99. There's nothing you're missing that, you know. So I spent my hard-earned retiree dollars, and I spent $9.99 plus excise tax, Hawaii excise tax, and I've been playing with it, and like all tools, you know, it seems hard now. I mean, I remember learning to use the drawing apps I used for my doodles, and it seemed really hard at the time. But in a couple of weeks, I hope I'll have enough time to play with it and create like just a simple abstract video that we can attach to all our audio to satisfy YouTube's requirements for video. And I did notice there are some like NPR podcasts that do exactly that. They have like a little, you know, looping video attached to their audio podcast, and that satisfies YouTube Music's podcast requirement. So TuneSquid for the iPad, and you can go to TuneSquid.com. Tune is spelled T-O-O-N, by the way, T-O-O-N, and the sea creature squid, one series of letters, TuneSquid.com. It's really interesting. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully it'll go well. I don't know. I started playing with it, and it was kind of hard for me to get a hang of it. But like I said, most of these drawing type apps and animation apps, it does take a little bit of a learning curve. But once you get it, it's like, ah, yes, yay. Okay, next up, John and I have become, well, listen, John is a psychologist, so I won't use the word obsessed, but we've become more interested than we should be. Maybe.
Perhaps.
And spending more time than we should be.
Well, and I'm further complicated that by playing around with something we've talked about in the past on this podcast, and that's Flutter. We mentioned Flutter in podcast 393. So about a little over a year ago, we talked about how it could build Windows apps.
Right.
And I feel like between playing around with Flutter this week and these AI tools, I have jumped into, 10 years in the future. It's really an interesting world. Yeah. So I guess, we kind of jump around in order here, but
sure.
Got kind of on the show notes, Bard and Bing image creator.
Yep.
Let's
jump into Flutter.
Yeah, so Flutter, for those that are not familiar, is a framework by Google, afforded by Google, so that means it'll be dead in a few years. But for now, it's kind of cool. And it's based on the Dart programming language. And the interesting thing about Flutter is that you build... It's a build one place, deploy everywhere sort of code base.
Like Java. Yes.
But unlike Java, it seems to work. And everything in Flutter is a widget. So you build widgets nested upon widgets upon widgets. You build in any IDE you want, but it works nicely in Microsoft VS Code. So you can download VS Code and have the Flutter plugins that will do really interesting things. You know, it's been a while since I developed in languages that required you to structure your screens in an XML or a XAML format. And the last time I really did was Android programming about 10 years ago.
Mm.
So this whole idea of being able to just go to the beginning of my code declaration, choose refactor and have it wrap into a new widget, or have it refactor the code so that I'm not chasing down brackets and braces and all of that annoyance syntactically, is just shocking right then and there. This idea of hot reload, where I can have the app up and change something, and as soon as I save the file, it reloads those components and I see the change instantly in the app, is really crazy to an old programmer like me. And and the fact that as I was working through Google's Code Lab to build the main demo that they want you to build out and play around with everything, at one point in that Code Lab, it says, you now have a task that you should be able to do on your own. It's, add another screen or another page of your widget and iterate through the word pair list and show all of the favorited word pairs. And I thought, okay, yeah, I can probably do this. And I started doing it. And I thought, okay, how am I going to iterate through these word pairs? I'll just ask Bing Chat to, how am I going to do that? And he gave me example code. And within about 5 minutes, I had that example code tweaked and in my and doing everything.
That was a Dart?
Yeah. So
wow.
Bing Chat can give you Dart code, no problem.
Wow.
And so I played around with it. I deployed, I built it for Mac OS and played around with it on my iPhone and downloaded Android Studio to be able to, even though I don't have an Android in place right now to play with, although I'm thinking about buying one just to have a testing device. So it is a crazy world when you can have an idea for an app, and between the tools available, such as the IDE plugins and the debugging abilities and all that, and AI, you can build faster now than I think I've ever seen app development.
It's a better Visual Basic.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly it. I always joke that I was the only, in fact, I still technically am probably the only programmer I know that doesn't really know Basic that well. I know enough Basic to be dangerous, but my first programming language, instead of Basic, I went with object-oriented Pascal. Well, I started with Borel and Delphi.
I was going to ask you, it was Delphi, yeah.
Yeah, it was Delphi 3 was the version. I played around with 2 and then went to 3 for pretty much everything. But, I think it's a great time for people to learn some of this stuff. And I've already started using Bing and ChatGPT to shave off. I'd estimate about 10 to 20 minutes of work a week. Just, give me initial things on this, or give me this at a glance.
Yeah.
And I'll tweak it and get it where it needs to be. And that's saying something for someone who types 100 words per minute, because it's not like I can't just pound out this as fast. It's literally give me a framework and let me edit it versus I have to generate it completely. And it's only saving 10 to 15 minutes, but that's still 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's like having a cheap grad assistant.
It sort of is. Except instead of having to wait an hour, under the best of circumstances, I can wait 20 seconds. I was really tempted. One of my graduate courses, I have doing article reviews, and I'm very tempted to take their article for this week. I actually should see if I can even do this. So I have the PDF sitting right in my downloads folder right now. I'm very tempted to upload it and just say, hey, summarize this, or, analyze it and just see what the...
That would be interesting.
But then I might get very depressed if it's not, if my students can't outperform ChatGPT.
Well, I don't know if that's depressing. You know, it just shows you either how good or how not good it is at this point. Right. I think we've seen, you've probably read the articles I have about people applying ChatGPT and these other kinds of LLM tools to, to the bar exam and to the MCAT and all kinds of various, tests that people take to get into, to qualify for various important things. So I think there would just be one more instance of it. Although it might give your students a pause for thought, about how to use tools themselves to make their own output better. I think last week we discussed that Japanese startup that has a required test for applicants for jobs for their company, where they have to demonstrate proficiency in creating prompts for ChatGPT and for Notion AI. So this might be the way of the world, so you need to know how to prompt things. It's beyond the keywords for a search engine.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I find this continuing to be an interesting discussion in the academic sector, because we continually keep coming across, I think most of the people I've talked to in the last month or two have taken the idea, yep, I'm not going to be able to fight it. But I still see a good half of them are, well, I'll just tell my students they can't use it.
That's going to work.
Yeah, the other half that I'm a part of, and one of my colleagues is definitely a part of, who did a lesson plan on it this week, is no, I'm going to teach you how to use it effectively. And she actually was showing her students how to use it, and, this is what you should and shouldn't do with it. This is what you need to check, because ultimately, if you can use it to produce high-quality work, that's using the tools. It's the same way that you would use a word processor to produce output that looks high quality when I print it out or when I view it on the screen. No different in that regards.
Yeah. Well, every, I don't know if I want to call it evolutionary leap, but it's almost like in the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen an evolutionary leap in the way we use computers using these large language model tools. Maybe not in, if you're saving 10 to 15 or 20 minutes a week, it may not seem evolutionary now, but I think that the fact that you're even using it and it's helpful, says something about it. As a retiree, I'm not quite sure what the use case is for me, except as a point of interest and, to do kind of answer questions I might have about certain things. And I've asked it a few. I think I had a problem with something. Oh, Teams. When Teams would not launch on my MacBook Air, but it would on my MacBook Pro, and I could not figure out what the heck it was. And it turned out it was almost like a registry problem. It was some kind of a caching thing I had to clear. And I think I asked Bing Copilot how to do it, and it gave me step-by-step. It turned out it was a 5-step process. Step 4 didn't actually work and wasn't necessary, but steps 1, 2, 3, and 5 actually cleared the problem. So, yay, large language models. AI is so much easier to say.
Yes, it is. LLMs aren't even easy to say.
No, it does not roll off the tongue. Well, maybe in certain languages, but certainly not in the English variant that I speak.
Maybe.
So what have you been building with Flutter?
So far, it's just been some of the example apps. I do have the whole thing that got me into Flutter this week is sort of a weird way I got there, which was I've had this idea to build a certain app, more of a service-oriented app for the town that I live in and maybe others, kind of a tourism slash directory app or whatever. I don't know. Just it'd be fun to run it and, it, you know, help local businesses that aren't all that tech savvy maybe get a tech presence. But, of course, I have such a large amount of free time in my life. I really have never had the time to even investigate programming once. So this week I was bored and I put an ad on Upwork just, you know, with a budget to see if this is even something I could hire someone to do that, right. You know, they could at least write the initial code and get the back end interface up and running and all that. And out of about 20 or so applications I got, I'd say at least half of them said I would build this in Flutter. And I thought, well, that's interesting that so many of them, especially since I'm paying practically nothing, you know, I put it right. Minimal. Because what I found on Upwork is that either they will respect your budget and tell you that, yes, this is what we can do for that little amount of money you're going to give us, or they just ignore your budget altogether.
Right.
They assume that you're joking and, you know, that you really have thousands of followers. But just the fact that out of all of them, the majority are saying, hey, for what you want to do, we would recommend Flutter and Firebase. And I thought, well, I should just check out Flutter. And eventually, maybe this weekend or next weekend, I do want to play around with Firebase and see what I can do with that combination. I might end up building this thing by myself, or I might be able to find a programmer for the very measly amount of money that I am offering to at least get me a jump start. Or the programmer that I might pay a measly amount of money to in terms of ad revenue to give me a jumpstart might just be Bing Chat.
Huh.
So that might be a possibility too. I might just use Bing as my co-author on this programming project.
Will you give Bing actual co-author
no.
credit?
Not at all. I will take a page out of my student's book. Although, here's the other odd thing about my week of getting back into programming. So listeners that have known my programming background for a while know that I had a couple of apps on the Google Play Store for a long time that I think generated somewhere around, maybe $1,000 or $2,000 at one point. And I didn't want to update them after 2016-ish, 2017-ish. And I also didn't want to have abandoned code. So I just unpublished them off of the Play Store somewhere around 2018 or something like that. And this week, I opened up my Google developer, whatever, you know, Google has 800 different developer dashboards and all that. But I opened it up just to see if my account was still in, you know, able to publish things.
Right.
And it was shot to me for an app that I pulled new downloads of probably 2018 that I still have something like 100 or, and I'll pull it up right now. I have 100, I have 792 still active installed users. Installed audience on one of my apps is 792. The last update on that app was August 17th, 2016.
Huh.
So it is really crazy to me that there are people out there running devices that old that when I pull it up, I can still see usage on these things. So if you're running an old Android application or an old Android device, kudos, because I don't know how you're doing it.
Also,
you're making it work.
You should upgrade. Really, you're probably a
you really risk. Really should. in fact, I'll see if I can pull up my install base by an Android version.
Yeah, because
that would be very interesting. But it's trying to load my things, and I don't think it's even going to load anything up right now. So we'll give it a moment. But yeah, if you are using anything, because I don't think, I mean, this app, I think, runs on whatever the Android distributions were for about 2012 to 2016.
And that's like forever in, you know, mobile years.
Yes. But Google, kudos to Google for not completely just yanking it and making it not work at all. Because apparently it does still work. It just doesn't work well.
Well, you know, this is interesting. So I'm looking at this site called, I don't know how accurate it is, but it's called composables.co, and it has an Android version distribution chart. And it's showing that Android 4.4 KitKat still apparently has 0.7%. Let's see, what's the first one that's significant? Android, I should know, we're currently in Android 14.0. And Android 9.0 has 13.2% of the...
My app install base right now, most of my users on my geriatric old app are on Android 13.
No way.
54% of my users are on Android 14, and then Android 12 and Android 10. So it's not people running old devices. It's literally, it must be someone who really liked my app, or 792 someone's who really liked my app and grabbed the APK and just keep throwing it on their new devices.
Wow.
And I hope it's still working for them. I mean, I'm not getting any crash data.
Right.
So, there have been zero crashes in the last 28 days. I guess I'm happy about that. But maybe I just have some really good code in there. It's a really simple SQLite database app. So,
speaking of old, you know, I was looking for the Google Android dashboard, and I happened upon just the Google dashboard. That's for your own Google account, and it has a lot of stats and recently used Google services. You know, for me, it's YouTube and Google Photos. But further down, there's a dashboard widget for Google Maps. And it shows I have three saved places in my maps. The one at the top of the list is from 2016, speaking of things that happened a long time ago. That's when I went to pick up my daughter from school, as I say. She was doing a study abroad in the UK. And I saved Victoria Coach Station in London to Google Maps. It's one of the three saved places I have. I guess I don't use that feature very much in Google. But... I didn't even realize it kept track of all of this. It's really quite interesting. Six Android backups. Blogger. Does Blogger still exist? Most recent post, May 4th, 2008.
Apparently so.
Wow. I was playing with it. By the way, this was the title of the blog I wrote on Blogger, just to play with it. In 2008, right? That's 15 years ago. Do podcasts kill iPod flash drives? You know, because you're erasing and writing and erasing and writing versus write once and, you know, keep forever as we do for, well, I guess I do songs on flash drives. But anyway, that was my question. I don't know what the answer. The answer is, I think, no. But podcasts did not kill iPod flash drives. But Apple killed iPod flash drives and iPod itself. So
that's... There is a joke that if you ever have something like that where the headline and it's a question, that it is, the answer is always no. And so that's sort of just what you're getting at, I suppose.
Oh, this is really... I've not looked at this dashboard. I'm not even sure I knew it existed, but it's... I think I've probably used it to download, data when they close a service, which happens a lot. But anyway, I'm glad you took a look at Flutter and Dart. I remember we were talking about it a while back, and I never had a chance to really look at it, or I'm just too lazy.
I would definitely look into it if you're just curious about app development. You can get the SDK and everything up and running pretty quickly.
Nice.
And just play around with it. You'll find it kind of shocking how easy certain things are, especially things that, if you're like me, you were always too lazy to implement before, and now you can implement them because it's one click. And
And I assume you're running this on a Mac OS device?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Mac OS.
All right. Okay. The other things we have are pretty much AI-ish. It's, you know, the only thing anybody's talking about these days, it seems like, and we're no different. So first thing is I got access to Google Bard. They gave access to anybody with a Google account, I think a subscription account of some kind, because I got an invitation as a Google Pixel user, phone user.
Mm-hmm.
I still have an old 4.8, which is my Android phone, still on Google Fi. And also I got an invitation as a Google One subscriber, and I have the $20 a year subscription, by the way. So I am not an elite subscriber by any stretch of the imagination. So I got invitations through both subscriptions, and started playing the Google Bard, which is a large language model like ChatGPT. And unlike Bing Copilot, it is not based on OpenAI. It's Google's own thing. And having fed both Bing Copilot and Google Bard the same prompt, I'm going to say that right now, Bing Copilot has the edge. It gives qualitatively better answers, and that's just my opinion, of course, and then yours. Your mileage may vary. But I know asking it a couple of things, you know, to list out a couple of suggestions, I thought that Bing's Copilot did a better job, but it'll be interesting to see what it does. The other thing I noticed about Google Bard is I asked it to create a chart of something, you know, based on publicly available data. And it said, oh, yeah, sure, here it is. Here's your chart. And I was thinking, oh, it might give me an ASCII chart because I don't think it generates images. But it just said, you know, chart, like in brackets. It didn't show anything. And it said, chart.
It's chart. Lots of luck.
Yeah. You know, the word chart. So there you go. And it did go on to provide a little bit of descriptive commentary about the chart I couldn't see. So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, it's early days for all of this stuff, right? And I'm expecting to play with it a bit more over time. I'm a little bit worried that, like, at least Bing Creator is upfront about limiting how many, you know, credits you have. So I suspect, and I think ChatGPT is doing that too now, and they've also got a commercial version. So it'll be interesting to see what a retiree budget can handle if they start charging for this stuff, or even if it's worth it. But we'll see. So anyway, that's Google Bard. Interesting. I think it's a little bit behind Bing Copilot. Speaking of Bing, I also played with, and you did too as well, John. I started playing with Microsoft's Bing Creator, which, like, oh gosh, what's OpenAI's DALL-E, something like that. DALL-E, which is probably DALL-E with a Bing name on it. I thought it did a pretty credible job. You know, it didn't know some things. I didn't have knowledge of some things in its language model, it'll get better over time, is my. Yeah. And it was pretty good. It's, you know, its response to my problems are not exactly what I thought, but or exactly correct in the sense that it's missing a few things or wrong about a few things. But I thought it did a credible job of creating images out of just words, so to speak. Have you? And you've played with it too. What do you think? I think you're pretty impressed.
Yeah, the image generation through DALL-E, and I've been playing with Night Cafe Studio quite a bit, which can do a couple of different backends. And image creation, it still depends on exactly what you're asking. If you're going to get something decent, or what they jokingly call nightmare fuel, you can definitely get some of that when you see, you know, the hands or arms or faces of certain things.
Yeah.
And sort of look at that and go, oh, I don't know about that one. But yeah.
But then real artists do that too. So
Yeah, that's true too. So
Speaking of prompts, I before the podcast started, I mentioned to John about a prompt that Bing flagged on me as being, I don't know. You know, it's like, whoa, dude, can you really ask, maybe you shouldn't ask this question. And the question was this. I asked it to create a banner for the Mobile Views podcast about mobile technology with two people, one an elderly Asian man, that would be me, by the way, John, in case you're confused, and one Caucasian man. I did not use the word elderly for you, John, because you're not. So one elderly Asian man and one Caucasian man. And it just says, oh, we need to review this request. We'll get back to you on it. And just sat there. It's like, oh, I feel, did I say something wrong to offend you? You know? It didn't seem offensive to me.
I had a similar issue, and it was because I had Safe Search turned on.
Yeah.
And I forget, I was asking about a initialism, or actually an acronym. And the acronym, I said, what is the, you know, origin of this acronym? And the acronym had profanity in it.
Oh, wow.
And it started to print out the acronym, and then it immediately cut it and said something like, let's talk about something else, or this might not be appropriate, or something along that line.
Well, that's so interesting.
And then as soon as I changed my setting back to
moderate or something,
it was okay.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, now I'm going to go ask it if it can tell me what snafu means and what fubar means.
That might have actually been exactly what I was asking it. It was fubar or snafu, so.
Right, which are very common terms for, you know, for geeks. More fubar than snafu, but still, that's interesting. Well, you know, and we're using, I'm sorry, we're using a Bing Copilot, or we're using something else, ChatGPT?
I think that was Bing Copilot.
Okay. And I wonder if Microsoft is being extra cautious with Bing Copilot, you know, because their chatbots have a history of going off the rails. You might remember Microsoft Tay and, you know, a few other things, including Microsoft Bing Copilot itself, where, it, you know, kind of, the, I think a New York Times reporter reported it going off the rails in one of his discussions with it. So they may be getting extra, extra cautious, which is interesting. It's an interesting line to draw, because, you know, words like snafu and foobar do have obscenities in them if you spell it out. I'm not spelling, you know, the acronym or the word itself, but the meanings behind it. But and yet, snafu in particular to me has some cultural color in its origins, and not to use that cultural color does a disservice, I think, to the history of, you know, why it came into being and all that kind of stuff. So, at any rate. so that was my adventures with Bing Creator. I will note that I'm using it in a web browser. Oh, sorry. No, this is the next one. Microsoft Loop was the next. John, did you have a chance to click on the link I sent you?
Yeah. Did it work? I went into Loop, and I played around a little bit. The problem is I can play around in Loop, but I can't do some of the things because I'm a guest in your Loop workspace. So that's it took a little bit where I had to, I think I have to create my own workspace, but I was able to get in. I thought that was it was pretty cool. I was playing with there. So I'm not exactly sure. It sort of reminds me that it's a spiritual successor to some of the things in OneNote.
Yeah.
You know, the freeform abilities in OneNote and such. So it'll just be another one that I think will be fun to play with over time.
Yeah, I think, and as I said in a LinkedIn post I made when I first became aware the Loop was available to the consumer version of Office 365, is that I was under impression earlier, you know, like 2 weeks ago, that Loop, actually last year when I first heard about Loop, I thought it was only going to be available to enterprise because of the way it's, you know, tuned for collaboration and drawing data out of your office environment and so forth and so on. And I wondered, you know, I wonder how it's going to be able to be used in a consumer version where we're not in the, let's say, in the same virtual tenant, so to speak, where, yes, we are in the same cloud, but, you know, we're in our own accounts, our own consumer accounts. And how do I collaborate with somebody like John, for example? He has his own Office 365 subscription. I have my own. But I would like to share, say, a podcast topics list, which is what I did. So I went to the Loop and I created a Loop component that was just a simple list, you know, a bulleted list of topics for today, actually. And the idea was to share that Loop component with John via email. And he clicked on that very long hashed URL.
It was an impressively long URL. You know, Microsoft never does anything. Yeah. It's sort of like the Microsoft product naming convention.
Yes. 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 We remember those.
Uniform Resource Locator Sharing 3.0 Community Edition Express Professional Non-Denominational.
Version 2.
Yes, version 2. Final real draft.
So I was really curious to see if we could use it maybe in place of Google Docs or as an adjunct. Like, can I embed a Loop component in Google Docs? Answer is no, by the way. So the idea is that you can, for example, for the folks who haven't looked at Loop, you could, for example, create a Loop workspace, have a whole bunch of stuff in there. One of them might be a table, one of them might be a list, one of them might be just, you know, descriptive text, and then share that component, just either the whole workspace or just that component with someone else, And you could, for example, email a or embed it in a Word document and share that, you know, or collaborate in the document, and or not collaborate a document. The document might be, you know, static on each desktop, but the loop component itself would be dynamic. And so if John edited his Word doc on his desktop, which is, you know, not like in SharePoint or anything, but just literally sitting as a file on the system, the loop component could update through my workspace and back to my Word doc. And in the enterprise, I can see how that would work, where you're in a shared tenant, basically you're in the same SharePoint, you know, entity. But as John and I, well, as I just learned from John, and I tried to share a loop component with him, it doesn't quite work that way in the consumer side. So it remains to be seen how loop for consumers is going to work, because I think it has a lot of promise. But the fact that most of us are not, unless, you know, you have a family and a family plan, and but that's like five people. If you want to have, say, a bunch of friends, maybe they're in a club or they have some kind of, you know, other collaborative work they're doing, and you're not in a business account, I'm not sure how it's going to work. But I will note that I do have a podcast scheduled for next month with a Microsoft modern workplace person, and I'm going to be asking some of these questions, as well as some enterprise stuff, like how do you label information that you draw into a component so that you don't inadvertently have data leakage, even within an enterprise. And you may have things that are considered, say, confidential, like employee status or employee performance evaluations, you know, which are, for obvious reasons, considered at least sensitive, if not confidential. And, you know, how do you make sure that kind of stuff doesn't get accidentally drawn into a loop component when you start querying for things? But anyway, I will find that out in a couple of weeks. April is coming up soon, so hopefully we can get that podcast scheduled with that person, and I can learn a lot more about this, because I'm really, even as a retiree, I see a lot of applications for Microsoft Loop components, if I can share things with people like John when we're in different, you know, different clouds, so to speak, or different parts of the cloud. The other thing I noticed about Loop is that it is in preview mode, by the way, so I'm sure a lot of this is going to change. I'm using it in a web browser. I tried to get the iOS Loop app, but the preview said that it is closed because so many people tried to grab it. It is available for Android, but my Android phone only has 128 gigs of RAM, which is a really short setting. I want to install another giant app on it. I tried to install it on Chrome OS because Chrome OS supports some Android apps, but it launched but didn't let me log in, I think. And when I tried to open a loop component on iPad, so I emailed John a loop component, I CC'd myself, so I clicked on my own link, and it tried to open it in a browser, but the browser did not show the component. And I have Edge installed too, by the way, on my iPad. And, it basically says, oh, you know, you want to open an app, which I can't get on the iPad right now. So, you know, growing pains. Initial launch is, you know, only a week ago, so I'm sure we'll see some of that get better over time. But for now, it's interesting times. I think, you know, John and I have both been early adopters for a lot of things, and this is no different from other things we've been early adopters of, where it's super interesting. It's got some flaws, holes, whatever you call them, shortcomings. Sometimes they get overcome, sometimes they don't. We'll just have to wait and see. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I'm kind of wondering how... I think I might go interview some enterprises and enterprise people to see how they're adopting this. I'll go find somebody.
Some fakes. Well, I look forward to hearing your interrogation.
And the other thing I want to note, it's not in the show notes, but... And, you know, as a poor old country boy... Poor old uneducated country boy. I am not an expert in classical music, but I am looking forward to the launch of the Apple's classical music app on Tuesday, the 20th.
Yeah, I also have hit the, you know, schedule to get it, button from the App Store. So I'm curious to see it as well.
Yeah. All righty. Well, as usual, I will thank the good Dr. John Westfall for joining me for this podcast 453. And we'll talk to you next time.